Hey everyone, this is a book of poetry that I only read because I saw it on Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And isn't poetry more interesting if you assume the poets are hitmen? Maybe Frost took the road less traveled because he saw the bloody footprints of his quarry. Perhaps nevermore was the raven confirming a hit on a foreign attaché. And don't you think Maya Angelou got John Wick-style revenge on whoever was putting her birds in cages? Today's book is The Prophet by Khalil Gibran.
And this is The Book File, a podcast about the best of books and the worst of books. If this is your first time to the podcast, welcome. And may we suggest checking out our back catalog of nearly 200 episodes with just as many books. I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic, a father. I'm feeling a little deceived because Dave recommended this book, The Prophet, and it didn't predict anything. All right. As usual, feel free to subscribe to the podcast so you don't have to manually download it every week. And if you love it, or if you don't, feel free to give us 5 stars.
Yeah, you can give the stars ironically if you don't love us.
Right.
That'd be such a joke on us.
Our latest 5-star comes from Displease Reviewer 2.
It threw me off, too.
It says, truly one of the greatest. Every joke is clever and funny, and Dave and Kellen have great chemistry and are funny in their own way. The books are great, too, and give meaningful story advice for writing. It was a great read while I told my kid sister about JFK. First of all, anyone who uses the phrase kid sister sounds like they were around during the assassination.
Yeah, you're minimum 60 years old.
But thanks so much, Displease Reviewer. And Dave, something I realized recently, the other day it hit me that we had one review a few weeks ago that I sort of teased because the reviewer said that their favorite episodes on the podcast were the ones with guests. And then they just listed off a bunch of episodes with no guests. However, it occurred to me that if someone started listening to the podcast like today, it could appear like in a glass half empty sort of way that this is my podcast.
And I'm the guest.
And you are nice enough to guest on it every other week. So to those people, if Dave is your favorite guest, feel free to go back and binge our first 160 episodes because he was really generous to be on every one of those.
Yeah, to when this show had a really bad booker.
All right, if you want to see me live, I'm going to be in Sunnyvale, California, May 30th through June 2nd, then Winnipeg, June 11th through the 15th. I'm going to be doing a fundraiser in San Diego on May 11th, and then I will be in Grass Valley, California on the 18th of May. I know this is messy right now, but just go to my website. It's all there. If you don't live in California or Canada, I promise that I have more dates coming in the fall.
Kellen books shows alphabetically starting with CA. Great news for our listeners in Canberra. So this book is short and wise and poetic. I describe this book as if The Alchemist were good. Kellen, on Goodreads, here's the second most highlighted Alchemist quote. It's the possibility of having a dream come true that makes life interesting. That was news to 15,000 people. The Alchemist is for people who wish a cat poster had better world building. By contrast, I loved this book. I got so much wisdom from it. But Kellen, what did you think?
I think this is a great time to let our listeners know who don't that you and I did an episode on The Alchemist. It's worth looking up. It's one of my favorites.
The episode.
Yeah, one of my favorite sort of unintentional roasts.
What cracks me up about The Alchemist is that I think there must just be stuff that I'm not getting because really good friends have recommended it to people whose opinion I respect a ton. And I just cannot stand it. So there might be some kind of emotional weakness or deep cynicism in me that makes me not like the book. But I think the problem is with the book.
It's like you're pulling the whole, it's not you, it's me, but you know it's them.
Well, everyone thinks it's them.
I enjoyed this book too, Dave. Thank you for the recommendation. You mentioned Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I also recently watched it, and I love it. There's that moment where the titular characters are having a conversation, and she says, the neighbor loves the book, The Prophet. And then he says, Mr. Smith says, everyone loves The Prophet. But you find out later she has read it and he hasn't. And I just think that shows the two types of people in this world, you know? Anyway, yeah, I did like the book. There are lots of bits of life advice that I enjoyed it because refreshingly worded by a poet than just like an aphorism generator, you know, which is what I feel like social media feeds us. All right, at the end of our episode, or even right now, if this book ends up sounding interesting to you, consider buying it using the link in our episode description. That way you get a book and support the podcast. It's available in paperback, hardback, Kindle, or free on Audible if you're a first-time subscriber. Actually, I think it's available on Kindle as well for free.
Even if you're not a big reader, this book is so short, and if it's on your coffee table, guests will be impressed. So if you don't do it for the beauty, do it for the status.
I just had an idea, and I'm going to go through with it. It would be worth it for me to pay the $25 to have a hardback book published, all blank pages, but I'll make it very thick, but just a big bold title on the spine so I can put it on my shelf for any house guest to see. And in between books like 1984, Great Gatsby, Moby Dick, War and Peace, mine is just sitting between that says, Kellen is smart, because that's why we have bookshelves at this point, right? All right, without further ado, here's some lessons that Dave and I took from The Prophet.
So I loved this line. For in the dew of little things, the heart finds its morning and is refreshed. Mm-hmm. Kellen, don't you think it's odd? Like, there are a million books about how happiness is in the little things. It's not the big things like awards and fame and multi-millions. Don't you think it's weird that the big things actually will make me happy? I think it's strange that I'm the exception. I had an experience a few months ago where I was taking a shower and all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is your life. Like these normal moments. This isn't like the prelude to something later. This is it. And I've had to start telling myself, you are not the ghost of your future. Oh. Meaning you're not this like ethereal non-being who has to work really hard for the real you who's just around the corner.
Yeah. I love that. That's a very meditative thing. Have you seen the movie Soul?
Yeah. I don't remember it super well though.
Tina Fey's character plays this character who is essentially like a spirit pre-Earth who gets dropped in the body of a person. And she's experiencing life for the first time and everything blows her away, like looking through a translucent fall leaf and eating her first pizza and feeling the breeze in her face for the first time.
Yeah.
And every time she pauses or has a question about it, the guy character who's in the cat is just he's so dismissive. He's just like going. Like, that's just at one point he uses the line like, that's just regular everyday stuff. And then the moment towards the end when his story comes full circle and realizes that that is life. The everyday stuff is everything. So why not pause for it, you know?
It reminds me of the John Lennon quote, life is what happens while you're making other plans.
I was wondering if it was too dark to say that I liked his other quote, ow, bullets.
It is objectively funny imagining John in his Liverpool accent saying that.
Dave, you brought up The Alchemist, which at least tries to be a story. And it was more entertaining than this book, even if it wasn't supposed to be. So well, this book is written as a narrative. It's like 3% narrative about a guy who is about to leave on a trip and he ends up talking to this group of strangers in town while he waits for his flight for his boat. I read a newer edition.
Updated for the kids.
Yeah. He's in Group B on Southwest, just in the terminal.
I have multiple friends who worked at Southwest, and they said, A stands for anywhere, B stands for back, C stands for center.
But I do love this quote. You talk when you cease to be at peace with your thoughts. And I would love it at that point if like a heckler in the crowd was like, you've been talking for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
But I love this. He continues, and in much of your talking, thinking is half murdered. For thought is a bird of space that in a cage of words may indeed unfold its wings but cannot fly.
Wow.
You ever hear someone talking and wonder, like, I think you're forming this opinion in real time. Like, what are we doing right now?
I for sure have had the experience of starting a sentence and not knowing how it's going to end, but trusting my brain to come up with it in time. Like laying tracks before the train.
I just think, or you hear someone and you're just like, you're telling me you didn't like the last Thor movie because it was sillier than the third one. Like, can you stop half killing your thoughts? Like, put some time into this and then we'll have a real conversation. Or I imagine in that process of thinking through an entire thought before saying it, you often find that it'll be denied permission to leave your head in the first place. This is something that I actually enjoy about stand-up, because the way that I write half my jokes at this point is going on stage with an idea of knowing where a joke starts and where it ends, but playing with the middle while I'm on stage. So I really am sort of sharing these half-murdered thoughts, but because I have the privilege of it being an iterative process, I get to continue that over and over and sort of, you know, Frankenstein the thought fully to life.
It sounds like what you're saying is that the audience in this book, they were not the prophet's first audience for this set.
Yeah. He does this in every town. He's like, I've lived here for 20 years and today I'm leaving.
He's like the music man of prophets.
Oh, but before you go, could you tell us? Well, sure. Ask me anything.
Well, you got trouble, my friends. They end up with him on a boat after they've bought 76 trombones. All right, a next line I loved. No man can reveal to you aught but that which already lies half asleep in the dawning of your knowledge. The older I get, the more I think that you just can't learn a lesson you're not ready for. I didn't know till I was an adult that the first half of It's a Wonderful Life is interesting. It's this story about, you know, putting your dreams on hold to serve your community. Yeah. And I was 10 years old, fast forwarding, like, when does it get to the time travel? But Kellen, you know how you reread a book you love and you get totally different, like, new lessons each time. And the lessons were there. You just weren't ready for them the last time you read it.
Yeah.
It's like that Mark Twain quote where he says, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's a Wonderful Life is... might be my favorite movie because of what you said. Like, as I grow older, I relate more and more with it and with George Bailey's journey of just trying to do what's right and being held back and seeing your friends excel.
Thank you.
But it is wild to me that it is classified as a Christmas movie because the last 18 minutes of it are a Christmas movie. Like, that's it. I think it's maybe because the highlights we see, like the famous clips we see are him jogging through the snow. Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. But overall, it's just a long, depressing story with triumph at the end. It would be like saying that Lord of the Rings is a volcano movie.
All right, this next one. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. That's what the judge said in my cousin's custody case. Okay. Being a custody judge seems really easy because every time you can just threaten to chop the kid in half. And whoever really loves the kid. Later in the poem, he says, "You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might that his arrows may go swift and far."
That is the, it's such the hard truth of parenting, is that you want to be able to control everything, and ultimately, you know, they will decide to go off on their own and often surprise you for better or for worse. But it's a rough truth that kids can make their own decisions. I mean, you understand, as a parent, you understand, you empathize just a little bit more with dictators.
No, for sure. My takeaway from Finding Nemo was that none of it would have happened if Marlin had been more vigilant.
He wouldn't have been Nemo. Yeah, that poor little fish wouldn't have been traumatized if the movie was Binding Nemo. I really like this quote. "And think not that you can direct the course of love. For love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course." In other words, stop stalking people.
Yeah. Wait, so when does that quote begin and your words start? It was so hard to...
He continues, "Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires." And he goes down this list, and I liked these two. "To melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody to the night. To know the pain of too much tenderness." Mm. This last one, man, is for me such a powerful, painful truth, that the two sides of the coin of love are that because we can love something so much, it can hurt us that much more.
Yeah,
that hurt, not just being like being mistreated by a malicious loved one, but even for the loss that we feel when losing a loved one, you know, a pet, a friend, a family member. And I learned that lesson when I fell in love with my appendix.
There is that aphorism that if you love your appendix, you have to let it go.
And it's really going to hurt you before that, like 3 days leading up to your 11th wedding anniversary.
Is that when it happened for you?
Yeah.
But it's a great thing if you forgot a gift. That line about the pain of too much tenderness, I know that one of our 20-year-old male listeners is trying to fit that into his Hinge profile so he can get with some hotties. Oh, no. That's the trouble now that I know, like, a little bit of like the backstory of like David Foster Wallace and other people, is that now anytime I hear something beautiful, I have to ask, do they mean it or are they horny? Like, if you say something achingly beautiful, is that from deep experience or do you want? Oh, God.
No, I agree. And I'm sure that 10,000 Taylor Swift copycats read the line "to know the pain of too much tenderness" and they're like, "All right, great. What rhymes with tenderness?"
This kegger sure was high on benderness. Next one. "When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. Mm. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight." That's the most beautiful line I've ever heard at 3.5 speed. Kellen, I'm texting you. This is what that sounds like.
When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which is giving you sorrow that is giving you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight.
So, that is insane. as much as I've made fun of it, I do get through books, especially nonfiction, by speeding them up. But I feel it less necessary on a book that's already only an hour and a half. Did you really, were you like, this is fine, but I got to get through it in 28 minutes? So is this a joke, or is that how you really got through this book?
I compare it to an opiate, where if you increase the concentration of the beauty, the high is stronger. No, I didn't actually listen to this book at that speed. There are times I'll be reading like a random book really fast, and then they'll say something really beautiful or deep, and I have to go back and slow it down and really process what they
said. Sure.
But no, I don't do that with poetry.
Okay.
I don't listen to like a ballad and think, but if it were faster, then I would get the angst more efficiently. Another one. When you work, you are a flute through whose heart the whispering of the hours turns to music. Mm. That's how Jeff Bezos announces he's cutting maternity leave.
Speaking of capitalism, I love this quote. You are good when you strive to give of yourself, yet you are not evil when you seek gain for yourself. For when you strive for gain, you are but a root that clings to the earth. I love this part. Surely the fruit cannot say to the root, be like me, ripe and full and ever giving of your abundance. And I think all of us know some of these fruits. And I'm not saying that in like the 90s high school bully way. I'm saying it's easier to virtue signal when you're loaded, right? I also think, as beautifully as this is written, there's for sure a complicated spectrum within seeking gain, right? On one end,
yeah,
it's putting food on the table, and the other end is taking over a country. At that point, you can't be like, I'm a root, I can't help it. But I do appreciate someone articulating from a fresh angle the idea that maybe it is okay to try and make money, you know?
I mean, yeah, partly it's that, like, airline principle of you have to put your own mask on so that you can scare the person next. No.
I like to bring my own mask and put it on when someone is sleeping next to me and then vigorously wake them up.
Scream. But that principle of like, you put your own mask on so you can help other people put their masks on. Mm. You don't put on every mask in the plane.
That's why Jeff Bezos shaves his head. It's so all the masks fit easier.
Oh, so they fit. Yeah, they adhere nicely. His skin is going to be so oxygenated.
And the last one for this section for me, I just have a question. He says, verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at a standstill and balanced. But then he just ends there. I'm like, how do I get empty? What does that mean? Empty of what? I think it's always the test of like, how applicable is it after this? You almost need sort of a wake-up call within the fantasy that he takes you on, because it is all beautifully written. And sometimes it is like, man, yeah, you're right. I do need to be more present. And other times, like with this quote, I'm like, can you tell me more? And he's like, no, you just gotta be balanced, man.
Kellen's the guy who goes to every poetry reading and at the end calls from the back, can you be more specific?
I'm raising my hand halfway through the reading.
What was at the end of the road? Okay, they're not like the sun, but what are your mistress's eyes like?
So, Ozymandias, like, could I get a little more backstory?
I mean, the way to convince people of BS on the internet is just, can you find the catchiest way to say the dumbest thing? Have you heard? There's this great quote from Leo Tolstoy.
Oh, yeah. I think maybe it's in this book I have next to my Kellen is Smart.
He says, I know that most men, including those at ease with the greatest problems of complexity, can seldom accept even the simplest and most obvious truth if it be such as would oblige them to admit the falsity of conclusions which they have delighted in explaining to colleagues, which they have proudly taught to others, and which they have woven thread by thread into the fabric of their lives. Like, if a belief has been really fun and has gotten you status and joy, it's so hard to let go of it. I say this thinking about other people, because I'm sure I don't have any of those. All right, random facts. So, Kellen, I'm going to read a movie synopsis, and tell me if you know this movie.
Kay.
A dissident being kept under house arrest recounts valuable lessons in a series of vignettes, while a mischievous young woman causes trouble in her town.
Ant-Man and the Wasp?
That's The Prophet, the movie.
Oh, what?
This book is just a guy giving a sermon, and Hollywood's like, but what if he were in prison?
Oh, no.
Not every IP needs an action movie. Kellen, you know the Sermon on the Mount movie where he and some Navy SEALs are fighting their way off the mount? So, Kellen, you know how jokes are person-specific, where one friend can tell a joke and it's funny, but if a different friend said the same joke, it wouldn't be funny?
Mm-hmm.
Just based on who they are.
Yeah.
Here's a line from the book that sounds so deep from him, but would sound so stupid if it came from a high schooler. Beauty is eternity gazing at itself in a mirror, but you are eternity and you are the mirror.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah. If you told me that a high school freshman came up with this, I would also believe you. Like, good job, buddy. Very deep.
Beauty is a juggler throwing bowling pins, but you are the juggler and you are the bowling pins.
So again, this book, it's ostensibly about this guy who's about to leave on a trip, and he's talking to a group of strangers in this public square. And it's written in a way that, like, a few of the townspeople have questions and he has the perfect answer for each one. So obviously they were all plants, right? Because one... One guy will be like, teach us about love. Or another, speak to us about joy and sorrow. And he just goes off. I would love it if there was someone in the crowd who didn't realize what was going on and they were just genuinely curious about something that this prophet guy hadn't prepared. So in the middle of everything, some guy's just like, tell us about personal finance. And the prophet's just like... Anyone else? Or just pretends not to hear him?
I think you said personal fiance. Love, then?
So.
You wish to hear of love?
I have a buddy, Simon Gibson, who's a comic, and he just goes off the rails. He's a very sort of Chris Farley type character, and he'll do this thing, which at first is typical of, like, comedian impressionists. Where he'll go, all right, I'm going to sing a song. This is Frank Sinatra, and he can sing any movie theme. So just throw out a movie theme. And someone will be like, Jaws. And he goes, no. And he just lets people say things until someone finally says Star Wars.
The one he can do. It is fun, the audience member who just isn't in on the bit at all.
Mm-hmm.
Picture like a prestige era magician being like, I will now do a bullet catch. And someone in the audience is like, okay, and like draws their revolver and fires. All right, I have some rapid fire of my favorite quotes.
Yeah.
Your joy is your sorrow unmasked, and the self-same well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears.
Mm.
Work is love made visible.
I love that.
Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding.
I love that work quote. This one I have questions about. He says, always you have been told that work is a curse and a labor of misfortune. But I say to you that when you work, you fulfill a part of Earth's furthest dream. Which I think is easy to say when you have a benefactress who pays for you to live in Paris and study art.
Wow, you know every part of this guy's sordid backstory.
It's probably harder when you're crushing coal with a pickaxe to say, I'm fulfilling a dream, than when you're strolling the Eiffel Tower with a baguette in each hand. maybe it's easy to call every type of work a dream when you've never done plumbing.
Yeah, all of his quotes on work sound like he's breaking a strike.
Then there's this quote. "And forget not that the earth delights to feel your bare feet and the winds long to play with your hair." Well, Mr. Prophet, nature also decided to take my hair, so now what? Every day I go outside and apologize to the breeze.
It's hilarious that we built houses because nature was always trying to kill us, and now we talk about nature like it's just love.
Last one for me. "Your house is your larger body." Yeah, but if you saw my first studio apartment, I would have to add barely larger.
Yeah, your same size body.
It's like, Dave, you know when you're in a restaurant and suddenly like a loud air conditioner shuts off and the room becomes much quieter, but you didn't realize until then how loud that sound was? It's almost like it was just this accepted white noise that you and your group had been talking over. Mm-hmm. When I lived in a studio, I would wake up several times a night because I slept in the same room as my refrigerator.
Oh, no.
When that thing turns off, it's like being woken up by silence.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of appliance noise, why do modern washing machines have like a whole theme song?
I know.
Why can't they do their job without like belting out an aria at the end? Like they have like a cold open and then the washing machine theme.
Yeah. They used to sound like a cop car from London and now it's like an elf with a piccolo. I love this quote. "The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain."
Yeah.
"And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives?" And I don't know that it's necessarily that you have the ability to feel more happiness after you've suffered more, or that it's more like the love and pain principle that I read earlier, that the very nature of joy is that it cannot exist without sorrow. For me, it's a beautiful quote, but it's a bit more messy than that. It's that I think sorrow at first can lead to confusion and even anger, and then sometimes eventually to deeper understanding and possibly gratitude.
Yeah.
More gratitude. But it's not as simple as the formula of my sadness has increased my ability to be happy. But also, what do I know? This guy lost two siblings and his mother at a really young age and then published a successful book that was translated to 100 languages. So I think what he's saying is that you can capitalize on sad experiences and then that money will make you happy.
Ah, that is, yeah.
That's the, he writes in layers.
That's why it's called The Prophet.